am a Beatle fan, period. In this episode, I am reaching out to Dave from I Got a Beatle podcast to pick his Beatle brain.
The Beatles come to America. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Welcome to the Beatles Come to America. I am your host, Tom Gallagher, minus the Beatle guru, Brooke Halpin. And there is so much Beatle buzz out there. There really is. There's solo and Beatle releases, and like there's a brand new song out there. I had to talk to a Beatle expert, and I was lucky to talk to Dave, the one half of I Got a Beatle podcast. And what you're going to hear in this episode is praise for the amazing podcast and Beatle-related thoughts and opinions. And check out the show notes for I Got a Beatle podcast and the Beatles Come to America, along with my sister podcast, the Jazz, Blues, and R&B podcast and radio show, period. Now, let's do this.
Let's do it.
And I have Dave from I've Got a Beatle podcast with me right now. I am reaching out to some podcasters who are Beatle podcasters because during the pandemic, I was working on my own podcast. It was my chance that there was a pandemic. We already had it planned out. It was a limited time. It was going through the Beatle US albums with Brooke Halpin, who was actually 18 years old in 1964. So his experience was great. Plus, he's written books and he's like kind of, I call a Beatle guru. So it was good to get his information like down because I'm second generation. But what I found out during the pandemic is that life was tough and I started really searching my Beatle friends. And I felt that that was my comfort space. Like that was like what got me through that whole pandemic is that I was just in love with the Beatles and I was in love with people who were in love with the Beatles. And it just seemed like, oh, there's a world out there. And now I look at them as like, you're almost cheerleaders because you're championing the whole, the Beatle world forward in a positive way. When I did my first show on the podcast, I thanked over 20 podcasters who, you know, are, and you guys were one of them, where I was like, wow, you guys are just like out there spreading that Beatle message and connecting with people who want to be connected like me. So I was like, wow, you're kind of like almost like my heroes. Like I'm so involved of the, you know, the world that we're going to lose our democracy and I'm freaking out. And all of a sudden when your show drops in, I stop what I'm doing and I listen to my Beatles stuff and I'm okay for a while. So I thought I'm going to reach out to some guys and just find out, you know, kind of where they are at in their Beatle world and just in music in general and see how they're doing. It's Dave and Chris. I've Got a Beatle podcast. You're right now starting your 225th, you know, show. And so it's people don't realize that that's a full commitment. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. And first, thanks for having me on. I have just been checking out all of your archives and different shows and so many cool jazz interviews, by the way. That's like Joe Lovano is one of my great heroes in the jazz world. So very cool to hear that. And all the Beatles stuff too. Yeah. So it's interesting, the Beatle podcast world and that whole time thinking back, 225, it's crazy. We started in 2012, I think, doing the podcast. And I didn't think we would be still going after all these, what, almost four, there'd be 12 years coming up here in 2024. So it's a lot of fun. It's kind of a family. I think the Beatle world is very much a family, sometimes a dysfunctional one, yeah. But it still can be a lot of fun just to hear all of our different opinions and to disagree and all that stuff. So I'm glad to be a part of your program here.
Oh, great. Thank you. Well, that Joe Lovano, he made me so nervous. Oh. I'm such a, like a super fan that sometimes I do this thing where I do 20 questions where I just ask goofy questions because how dare I talk about his music? You know, I'm a fan first, not a musician. So when I got into it, he just went with it. It was a lot of fun. He really had a good time. What I like about your show in general is that there's this thing in the Beatle world, this functional world that we're living in now, where, you know, they're putting like George and John into a mythical like deities and where you know they're guys, and if they were alive today, they say, "Dudes, cut it out." When you read the scripture, you know, of what they say and how they act, you know, you almost get to a point where they just could do no wrong, and they were just guys. And one thing about you guys is that you are not afraid to say, "I'm not really into this song," or "I'm not into this," or "I'm not into that." It doesn't mean that you don't love the Beatles. And when I do our podcast with Brooke, I was negative about some things, and he pushed back and went, "Wait a minute. I love the Beatles. However, I'm allowed to not love this." You guys are like that, and it probably drives your fan base crazy.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate you saying that because that's something that we talk about a lot and we've had to deal with since we started the podcast is people saying, "Oh, you don't like the Beatles. You must not like the Beatles. You hate Paul McCartney. You hate John Lennon's music. You're spitting on his grave." All these kinds of nasty comments, and then we say, "Well, why would we be spending all this time putting this podcast together and doing the research and reading and interviewing and listening if we didn't love the Beatles?" Of course we do. But like you say, I think there is a tendency to deify the Beatles because they were, as I think we all would say, the greatest group in pop history. And but that doesn't mean everything they did was amazing all the time. And I think it's interesting in a sense. And you know, I think of this from my classical world because I spend most of my time as a professor in the teaching music theory as a classical person. It's interesting to look at music that composers wrote that isn't that great. Maybe some of their early stuff or some of their they were writing for a commission or something real quick to get money. And it just makes you realize how the good stuff is that much better. And you need to have a critical eye, I think, and a critical ear, or else it just becomes kind of silly. Like, what's the point if you don't have any criticism? So I appreciate you saying that because, like I say, we've gotten all kinds of comments, as I'm sure you do too on yours.
Oh yeah. I mean, we did this Best of George,
Oh,
and
yeah.
I had to say, look, I love Beetle George, but I think when he went solo, his voice intensity or some of the like, why is he playing the slide guitar? And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm losing my mind. I feel like when he steps at the plate, when he's with like major artists like the Traveling Wilburys or Jeff Lynne. But boy, some of those albums were just horrible. And I was just like, I'm not like a big fan of George solo. I love George Beetle. And I said, you know, and it's tough for me to pick out like amazing tracks from George Harrison, but I do appreciate, I see when he gets excited about music, it bubbles over in the sound. I can see that. But boy, there's a lot of bad albums. And when I said that, then it was like,
Oh
okay.
boy. Yeah, they were
It
the
was like,
knives come
what?
out.
The one thing is that we did an opinion piece on Now and Then because there was something to it, and I listened to you guys first actually before we went and did our thing, and the word dirge came up, and I reread I listened to it because I'm like, did I make that up? Because I 100% agreed with your analysis of it. Yeah, no, I'm totally. I was like, yeah, when I did my thing, I was going to ask you, do you still feel it's a dirge that hasn't grown?
I have. That's the funny thing about there's all this hype and this hoopla about this song, and then we all listen to it for a couple days really intently. I haven't listened to it really in the past month or like hardly after it came out. But when it did come on again, I thought, yeah, it's still kind of the same.
I said
hasn't
if the
changed.
I said if the Eagles put out like a new album right now, it would be side two, track four. It's not that that impressive. There's no bells and whistles. And I said when I was listening to it, I was disappointed because I saw options. I'm like, oh, why didn't they do this? Like, well, why is the string so low? Why is the slide guitar so boring? Why is the, you know, it's like, why not put horns in it? Why isn't Jeff Lynne back? You know, there was like, why isn't it like the other two songs had the opportunity to be a little mystical, you know, like bad cuts from Magical Mystery Tour, like some that wouldn't make it. Why didn't this have that? Why is this kind of a drone? So,
I
so
think
I
it's,
had a lot, of questions.
Yeah, me. I think I still do. And you may remember Chris and I kind of disagreed a little bit. I was much more kind of skeptical about the whole process. He had his own issues, but I think mine. It seems to me that that song stemmed a lot from McCartney. It was almost a total McCartney production. As I think I even said, it sounded like his solo music from the early 2000s, kind of the same sheen.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, you know, we were talking about George earlier. I think it missed George. I think it needed his either sarcastic kind of humor or something to push back on Paul, because it almost became a vanity project to me. And that was very controversial. I mean, there were people, you saw it too, I'm sure, the people who were really emotionally moved by that song. It's not my place to say what you should or shouldn't feel about a song, but I do try to take some distance from it and look at it from a critical perspective. And like you, I think there were some missed opportunities, and it was just kind of a weird thing overall. And I don't know how it's going to hold up. Like you, I'm second generation, and I think the other two songs, the Jeff Lynne songs, there was something more to them in a way than this one. And I don't know if that was George or Jeff Lynne or what, but it's, I don't know. I'm going to be thinking about it a while.
That was one thing I said too. And I thought about this, and I wanted this to be really successful.
Yeah.
But just to answer, like you were talking about, this song was supposed to go anthology. There's anthology 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. Each anthology was supposed to have a brand new song. The first one didn't have it because the song wasn't ready. So, I mean, that was kind of where it was supposed to go to drive like commerce, you know?
Of course.
So why I was so bent out of shape about this song is that I really wanted it to be successful, because with this reissue world that we live in from 1970 on, there's only a handful of reissues that the Beatles had that had great traction. The anthology of the Red and Blue, the original
one came
crazy. The anthology, Love soundtrack, the number one, that album was the best-selling album of that decade.
Yep.
And then the Bonanza was Get Back. And that was what we're coming off of. And Get Back is not just like a big win for Beatle fans. It was amazing. Like I could turn that, like anyone who's not, like anyone in my like reach, did you see that Beatles thing? Did you see Beatles thing? Did you see that? Went it great? But like, I wanted to share the wealth of how cool the Beatles are, and they're there. And it's the most craziest, amazingest thing I've ever saw, you know, like behind the scenes at a pivotal time in their career. And there's contact. He wove it really well. It's great. I wanted that kind of win when I got this Now and Then. And then I read the comments that were really like, you know, like people were not loving it. And I was like, this is kind of a Beatle letdown. It's just a reissue. There'll be more reissues. Yeah. And we cross our fingers that like maybe something in the future will spark that kind of excitement. I wrote down, like when I was talking, I would have loved to seen a clothing line based on the Beatles stuff, because what they were wearing was very cool.
Like the Nehru suits and things like that. That would be very cool.
George was rocking it. Like, you know, additional episodes, like, you know, we didn't know if Disney, this was a hit or not. You know, it's mum's the word, but every day is available. So for the Beatle fans, just give it to us. Like there's a lot of trash on Disney. Why can't we have our trash? And the full rooftop, like just like, okay, give us that. Just give us more. But what are you holding out for at this point? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I was like so bent. I put more pressure on this song, a really average song, because I really wanted to turn to strangers, because I'm the Beatle fan, and say, oh my God, did you hear that new song? And I was like, oh, this song. It's like, this is not something that I want to like really talk about to strangers, because it's like,
Yeah, it is. And it brings a question. This is another thing that, speaking of controversy, we also face this too. I think Chris and I may differ a little bit on it, but I wonder, is it really, people are so excited when Ringo has a new EP or Paul goes on tour. And I'm very mixed about it because I think, I'm glad they're doing what they're doing, but am I interested anymore? Or is it, are they a museum piece now? Or I don't know. I'm just very conflicted. And I feel like we're pushed. We have to follow the hype. And the Beatles are so good at hype. I mean, this whole red and blue campaign was
Out of
like
control.
out of control. Every permutation and a tote bag and a shirt and
Yeah.
all of that stuff. And I just, at some point, I hear people say, "Oh, I can't wait for that Please Please Me box set." And I thought, do I don't know if I really care that much. I'm fine with Please Please Me as it is and what we have. I don't know. I
It's a
wrestle with
well,
that.
I understand that it's a well thing. Like
Yeah.
when the Sgt. Pepper came out, the extended box set, it was really tiny. Now there was really nothing to it. And the
Right.
Band on the Run thing, and I
Oh,
bought them
yeah.
and I felt like, oh, I don't really see anything more here that I want to really hear. And that the packaging was so lame that I
Yeah.
was like, this is a waste of money. And then
Right.
from then on, now Paul, some of his stuff came out like that was good, with a little book and whatever. And if I do have like money to spend where I feel I just want to collect, stuff, then I'll reach back and see if I can get it, because I do feel sometimes like I'm missing out on something.
Yeah.
But I really look at it as like, I have the goods. I got the good songs. Whatever they're going to do to it going forward, I'm still in love with the originals, and I'll listen to the new stuff. And if it moves me, it took me a long time, like years, to get it to love. I was like,
Yeah, me too.
and then I was like, okay, it's cool.
Yeah.
And so
Yeah.
it took me a while. And
Do you feel that way with the Giles Martin remixes, or is that something? Because that, I just say it's another way to hear the album, and he's not adding anything necessarily. He's just refocusing it, but some people really get mad and say we don't want any change. And I think it's just another thing to listen to. I
I
don't
think
know. What do you?
it's a marketing tool to
Yeah.
gravitate to younger people. And I said it to Brooke, and he was angry when I said it. I'm like, Love Me Do is great. And it's not because it's remixed where it sounds clean. And younger people don't like to hear old stuff,
Right.
like they won't go back to a Howling Wolf record.
No.
But yeah, and that's a great album. They're like, oh my God, Howling Wolf. So they won't go back to that because it sounds dated. So what they're doing is they're updating the sound. The songs are similar, but it'll sound good right beside a Olivia Rodrigo or Diablo.
Yeah.
Or yeah, it'll sound good, and people are like, oh, that sounds good. They won't realize that this is like a 55-year-old song. So in that way, it draws new people in. If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. I actually wrote in here what things I'd like to see in the future. I thought they were gonna, like, I'm not into this red and blue, but I understand that they're gonna go backwards and redo all these songs. So there's nothing.
Right.
I was hoping they kind of reimagine like Magical Mystery Tour, give
Yeah,
us.
what happened to Magical Mystery Tour? That was completely ignored in
Yeah.
this. Yeah, they skipped right over it.
I have this great idea where you it's an interactive piece where all these, because it's a horrible, it's horrible. But
Oh,
if
yeah,
they
the
every single piece of footage that they have is available, and then you can pick and create your own movie of it.
Ooh, I
Yeah, how
like
cool.
that idea.
Yeah, it's an interactive piece where you kind of create your own little trip out thing.
Hmm.
So you could even do, different, like even like I'm the Walrus, and kind of like reimagine the video by the pieces that are available.
Oh, that's
So
very cool. So they could be, I'm the Walrus could be actually them dancing at the end of the movie, or have I'm the Walrus to the dancing or something. That'd be fun.
it's all your imagination, but to
Yeah.
make the better movie, it's
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
so I mean, that was an idea of mine. But if I thought they were gonna, I assume that they, I don't understand why they're doing red and blue, because that's an American release more or less, and I would have got rid of that, and because I would start with the beginning and work your way forward, I
Yeah.
guess.
But I guess they thought it was an anniversary since it was 1973, but I don't know. It came out of the blue. We were all expecting the Rubber Soul, some sort of Rubber Soul set after we got Revolver. We thought, Oh, it's going to be Rubber Soul next. And then all of a sudden, Red and Blue. What? Where did this even come from? And then, we're going to put Now and Then, which we hadn't heard about either. Suddenly, that's jammed onto the Blue album. It was just very strange.
I believe that they know in advance this whole idea, like, Paul called up Olivia to say, hey, we're going to do this song. I don't believe that's true. I think there's boardrooms with the Apple people and all this stuff is marked.
Yep.
And even with McCartney's, the color disc is because vinyl was they were backlogged. That color wasn't available initially. No, I'm serious. And now it's available. Oh, okay. Well, now we knew where to put it. There's nothing more special about that album at all. let me do a quick hit with you.
Sure.
Okay. What's your favorite Beatles song?
Rain.
Yay.
That's always has been. Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you a question about this song. Okay. So we had the rarities that came out in the 70s. It was and then we had this anthology, which was great. You know, we had more information. Now we have the Revolver box set, and they're like, oh, by the way, Rain was speed up. So
that was the craziest. That was one of the craziest things to hear.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, we're supposed to, like, are we believing this? Like, this is like, okay, if they played it to that level, they've never done anything like that before.
No.
And it's genius if it was done. And two, like, it's immaculate, and to slow it down to get like I just feel like they're kind of lying. I don't believe this to be true.
that story just came out of nowhere. I mean, it sounds, you know, the real recording sounds slow. If you try to play along with it, it's not, you'll have to tune your guitar because it doesn't fit, because it's a little slow, sounds slow, but that fast when I listened to it on the Revolver box set, whoa, that's fantastic. Yeah. The drumming is even better than we ever thought. And Paul's bass line.
It's insane. Crazy. It's like everyone did meth and then they're like, let's do this.
It is.
Okay, I love the song, but that thing is weird and no one's talking about it. That's why I was like, let's talk about that. Like,
ooh, that's
like
a really good show topic. Yeah.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
The part I love about Rain is it's a phenomenal song. And the only piece that I like to improve it is that break where the Paul plays the bass a little and then doo-doo, 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 and then it starts up again. It's so hot. Like, that is so hot. It was so short. The only criticism is I want more of this song.
Exactly. Exactly. It's too short.
Yeah. I think it's genius. Everyone gets to shine. Everyone does such a great job. And it's a little hallucinogenic. It's a little poppy. It's a win. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, wow. That was awesome. All right. favorite album.
You know, that's a hard question because it changes all the time. Yeah. You know, I'm writing an article. The article is going to be published about Maxwell's Silver Hammer, which is, you know, probably the one of the most hated Beatles songs. So I've been listening a lot to Abbey Road, and I think, oh wow, you know, I always forget how great Abbey Road is. But then I put on Sgt. Pepper. I was like, oh yeah, that's so great too. And now with the Red and Blue there's some great Rubber Soul songs. So I don't know. I used to say Revolver, but I think, oddly enough, it was the box set of the White Album that kind of got me fixed on that. So I would say Pepper or the White Album, kind of that period.
That's cool. So that's
it's
fine.
It's hard to say.
It's a moving target. So it does. It lands, you know. And I agree. Exactly. Now that box set for the White Album is amazing. Like, that's
one of the best.
That was money well spent, you know.
Yes.
And the Revolver was like, like, it's not
exactly, you
know, it's a great album. I would love something more to it. Okay, your favorite Paul album?
Favorite Paul solo album?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a really good question. Well, from a nostalgic viewpoint, I think when I was really becoming a Beatle fan and a solo fan, Flowers in the Dirt had come out. So there's still something very magical about that period. And I also went and saw him too the next year with my mother. Went to a concert in Chicago. So I think so. Flowers in the Dirt is always kind of a special album.
Now you can end with that. You don't have to.
Okay. Yeah. I think.
I know. And I know in these podcast world, people like kind of Flowers in the Dirt. I think it's a great album.
It is.
And I think that, you know, it would have been nice to have Elvis do a couple more tracks, but it energized him.
Yes. And it was also one of the last albums. Now we know this in retrospect. It was one of the last albums where he actually played a lot of the songs on tour. You know, if people remember, he actually opened his tour with Figure of Eight and playing My Brave Face and some of those. Yeah. I think Rough Ride might have been on there. I mean, Got Married. Things like, yeah, like he actually played a lot of those tunes. Put it there. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now you don't hear any of his new songs or you hear Fo You. Not ones you want to hear. So, but yeah, I'd say Flowers in the Dirt. I don't know if it's his best, but it's one of my favorites for sure.
Yeah, I'm going with Ram, but
yeah.
It's, you know, sometimes Venus and Mars kind of works for me.
It does. It's very underrated. It's overlooked because it's, you got Band on the Run and then, you know, the big Wings Over America tour, and Venus and Mars right in the middle, but there's some great stuff on there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to ask for Ringo. That's the Ringo.
Well, our podcast listeners know we love to talk about Ringo. It's just too fun to talk about Ringo. Well, I know it's not very original, but probably the Ringo album. I think I'd go with that one.
I wrote Blast from the Past because it was
crazy. Oh, there you go. Even better. Yeah, then you actually get the hits. Leave it that way.
The most cringiest but like fun albums is Bad Boy and Ringo the Fourth. So, I mean, in a love-hate way, like, you're like, oh, I'll listen to this because
yeah.
I would kind of secretly want to goof on it.
I know, I know.
How about let's do George if we can.
Mm-hmm. So favorite George or?
Yeah, solo.
Oh, favorite George solo. I always go with 33 and a Third, weirdly enough. I think it's a great album. And it, after, you know, the obvious consensus answer is to say All Things Must Pass. But, I love All Things Must Pass. But there's something so different about the sound on 33 and a Third. It's much more soulful. He's got like a kind of funky people playing with him, and there's also humor on it, whereas I get a little tired of George's the preachy, heavy, serious type songs that you had in the early 70s, and you get fun Crackerbox Palace or This Song or things like that. So I probably like 33 and a Third.
This was, I always think that it's like he's playing behind the Saturday Night Live band.
Totally. Yeah. And he was on at that time. Yeah.
I was like, it sounds like it. Like, it was like, like I could see him like with those guys behind him.
Yeah, definitely.
I do the self-titled 1979 album.
If you talk to Chris, he will, I think that's probably his favorite. It's a great one too. Yeah.
It's great. But you know, I was very mean and I said, basically everything that George did as a Beatle is better than what he did as a solo artist. I just didn't feel he was motivated. I mean, and that's kind of where I'm at. I think he's a cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a tricky one to talk about because I think he had some ups and downs, like some big ups and big downs.
I got, here's an idea for you for one of your shows, because I know you're always looking for content.
Yeah.
Okay. The theory that the Beatle magic ended in 1973 because all the solo artists, like they were kind of trying out some of those songs, and by 1973 they were done. Like,
yeah,
they either made it to vinyl or they got, you know, into a different song, you know. So like the yeah. Beatlesque vibe of these solo artists died in 1973.
I think there's something to that in a way. We did one of our episodes was a kind of a best of 73, and we took, you know, yeah, we took songs from the albums that they released that year because it was a real peak. And it's kind of sad in a way to think about how, if you say All Things Must Pass is George's best album and that's it, what's the rest, the next 20 years or like the rest of his career is done? Like, yeah. Is that it? He peaked and that was it. I don't know. It's like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, Cloud was, Nine.
Yeah. Cloud Nine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even the one that, the one after that, when he passed.
Oh, Brainwashed. Yeah.
It was, some of it was, you know, really, he was on that something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're running into the, 8 minutes left.
I see. Yeah.
The one thing I wanted to see is because I know you're a musician and you have that degree, is that to be a Paul fan sometimes, I know it sounds like we're being negative on this podcast, but I ride and die with Paul. However, you know, to be a fan, you have to understand that sometimes he'll throw out lyricals like My Salamander that are nonsensical, but not creative. Or he loves average people, ordinary people. Ooh, and he loves he has song fragments that he just kind of continually weaves together. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's as someone who was a child through the 70s, people used to make fun of me because I liked the Beatles and Paul McCartney. And then when I was in the 80s, I was in college and people railed on me because of Give My Regards to Broad Street and the harp was coming out. That they're like, you know, they're all into like Tears for Fears or NXS or How Dare You like this, you know. It's like
I bought Press to Play on cassette in 1987. So hey, that's how cool I was.
Yeah, no, I ran out, got it, and the album cover is not quote cool.
No.
So I mean, it was hard. It's hard to be a fan, and then I think that you know, people kind of calm down and realize that there's some talent. And he really went back in and kind of like changed the narrative, I think, as a more of a creative than not. But he still will throw out all those tropes I talked about before. I just wanted to get your feedback on it.
Yeah. Paul is the most fascinating Beatle to me. I mean, I think we've all talked about it so much, but the Get Back scene and Get Back when he's writing Get Back and it just comes to him and he's just oozing songs. He's everywhere. He's just in that movie, 5 minutes, he's got a new song or just running through one after another. He's a music machine and a real, just so in awe of his musicality. And I think it's in a way, it's also hard because he has had a solo career for all these years after John. And I think he's had trouble dealing with that in some way. And so he doesn't have that filter of John or worrying what John's going to think. So you don't get My Salamander. Oh, that John was still alive when that came out. But let's say Oklahoma was never like this from Press, you know,
oh, wow.
John would have just said this, that's crap. Yeah. And, but Paul is, he's amazing. I think he's just, I'm not ashamed of saying I'm in awe of his musicality and his music abilities, his compositional abilities, his bass playing, his piano playing, his guitar playing, his singing. And you just take the ridiculous lyrics. I think that's just part of the package.
Part of the package. And, you know, I think Elvis Costello said, I couldn't wait to play with him, but all he wanted to do was doodle and smoke pot. So, you know, and I think when he was working with Danny Lane's like, yeah, I'll doodle with you and smoke pot.
Exactly.
So you really needed someone to fight hard against him and give him that, you know, like if he's the smartest guy in the room at all times, you have no one to challenge him.
Right.
So that's where John was like, no, I'm really the smartest one. You know, it's
exactly.
Like,
exactly.
So there's the counterpoint that was always missing, I think, in his music, is that he needed to always, like, you know, go up against someone or you know, and fight hard for things, as opposed to just say, My Salamander, I'm an artist, what do you want? You know, it's like, I got an album, I got number ones.
Yeah, exactly. And you think about it, that's I think I read when the Flowers in the Dirt reissue came out that, oh, that he and Elvis had some falling outs, and it didn't maybe it was because Elvis, I mean, he's a great songwriter and a tough cookie kind of guy, so he didn't want to put up with, he's like, you push yourself, come on, you're Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he
And maybe
wasn't.
Paul didn't want that kind of
No,
treatment.
he. I think it was like I go in the studio, I do what I want, and then I think
Exactly.
Elvis was a little harder edge. Like we got to get this knock this out. Yeah, we are at 4 minutes. I want to thank you for doing this. What I reached out to a lot of podcasters because when I'm in awe of all you guys. I think, yeah, I'm like I realize now that like. I'm just one of you guys. Like, I just want to like hear what you guys have to say. As a kid, I had my Beatle friends and I could like talk to them and like say, hey, listen to this. Like, oh my God, did you hear that? I love this song. That kind of, as you get older, you're just a weirdo when you don't have that, when you don't have that connection. So this podcasting world kind of creates that because, I live in my world and I don't run up to anyone and say, oh my God, Press Play is my favorite album. It just doesn't come up because, but to you, I can like, oh yeah, it feels good. And I love this world that, and I know that you guys work really hard and I know that podcasting is super hard and I know people have real life. And, I think some people forget that when they listen to what you're doing, that you're carving out a lot of time out of your personal life. And I respect that. And the fact that you guys are sitting there arguing about, Spirit of Ancient Egypt. I'm like, yes, bring it on. I
Well,
love
thank you for saying that, because I appreciate it. It's nice to be heard, and we do it because of listeners, because and we despite the sometimes the negative feedback we get, saying, oh, you must hate John Lennon, you don't like this song, that's my favorite, we love the interaction and hearing from listeners, because that's why we do it. I mean, we have fun just talking to ourselves, but it's much more fun to have these kind of discussions and battle royales about these songs, and pick over this great catalog that has so many riches that we can all get interested in and disagree and agree about. So I really appreciate having the opportunity to chat with you about it.
love it. Yeah, I thank you very much because, I just realized that, okay, I think I got I found my people. I know I'm unfortunately, they're not next door. They're in this podcast world and that's okay. So
Absolutely.
yeah. And I love that. So I appreciate it. It's Dave from Dave and Chris, and it's I Got a Beatle Podcast. It's a perfect name for a podcast. I'm going to put the links into this interview. We want to thank you very much. And the one thing that's great about it is that you're clocking in. If you've never heard these guys yet, you have 200 shows to listen to. So you can always go backwards and kind of see what they're up to.
Yeah,
So
don't listen to the first couple shows. They're kind of rough, but
all
like
are.
everybody,
Yeah.
right?
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Right, thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Dave, from I Got a Beatle Podcast. One of my favorite shows. Subscribe to them if you haven't yet already, and don't forget to save democracy. Let's close out the show with a Wings classic. It's Spirit of Ancient Egypt. Over and have a great day.